Shalom, it is a pleasure to be here, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank my dear friend Rabbi Andrew Shaw and his amazing team at Mizrahi UK for organising this fabulous conference. And also thank my good friend Rabbi Doron Peres, head of World Mizrahi, for his phenomenal leadership enabling conversations such as this to take place. By virtue of you being here, I suspect that you're aware that the title of my talk is Modern Orthodox Interiority, Men, Women, and the Unspoken Spiritual Crisis Facing Our Community. And with this in mind, I'd like to tell you something that happened a couple of days ago when a friend saw a flyer with the title of my talk, who responded with a tone of concern, saying that, unfortunately, I've made a typo, because surely the word should be inferiority. My response to them, like my response to anyone here who might also be thinking the same, is that there is no mistake in the title. In fact, as someone who, though preferring not to use labels, most certainly sees himself within the modern Orthodox camp, I would strongly reject any association with the word inferior or inferiority with modern Orthodoxy. Nevertheless, precisely because I do ideologically identify with modern Orthodoxy, and precisely because I talk with many others who do the same, I feel that there are things that must be spoken about concerning a form of crisis facing our community due to our lack of emphasis on interiority. However, before I define that term, and especially since I am from the UK, I'd like to begin by talking about Anglo-Jewry's early role in the development of modern Orthodoxy, while also quoting from one of Anglo-Jewry's great modern Orthodox Torah teachers. As you may know, it is often claimed that the origins of modern Orthodoxy stem from the United States, and especially from the world of Yeshiva University, and of course, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik. Yet, as Alan Brill recently noted, the term modern Orthodox was, in fact, first used by Claude Montefiore in 1892 about the head of Jews College, Michael Friedlander, in his review of Friedlander's book, The Jewish Religion, which was first published in 1891. Admittedly, as Brill notes, the term modern Orthodoxy did not enter the British lexicon at the time. Still, as someone with deep connections to Jewish College, now called the London School of Jewish Studies, I believe that the usage of this term 130 years ago about an Anglo-Jewish scholar who was ahead of a great Anglo-Jewish institution is worthwhile publicising. Now, having mentioned this, I would now like to quote from another great Anglo-Jewish scholar who was also another head of Jews College, Rabbi Dr. Isidore Epstein, and who, writing in the early 1950s and in his introduction to his book, The Faith of Judaism, said as follows. The crisis in Orthodox Judaism is fundamentally one of faith or belief. It is true that Jewish Orthodoxy is primarily a religion of action, and its still faithful adherents are mostly concerned with the decay of Jewish practice. But on examination, it is found that the principal and the most serious, although by no means the only cause of this decay, is a weakening of belief in the principles of Judaism. The Jewish religion in its Orthodox manifestation appears to the average man of modern education to be moribund and tied to old formulas and conceptions which a growing mind of man has discarded long ago. Among the several causes producing this situation must certainly be included the poisonous atmosphere generated by the incessant output of a literature written in a charming and captivating style which attacks the foundations of religious ideas. Thus do men and women breathe a vitiated atmosphere which they mistake for fresh air and insensibly suffer from an spiritual anemia which is fatal to Jewish loyalty and Jewish life. Given this, he concludes his introduction by saying, there is no question that numberless men and women lapse from the Jewish faith because gradually or suddenly they wake up to the fact that they do not know what they have to believe and why they are to believe. Only if a greater effort is made to instruct people in the doctrinal aspects of the Jewish religion and its underlying philosophy can there be any hope of stemming the tide of irreligion which sweeps away so many, and of building up a generation of unflinching religious loyalty and sturdy faith. Then, gone will be the fear that the increase of knowledge will destroy the essence of our faith. On the contrary, equipped with a deep understanding of what Judaism teaches, the increase of knowledge will only serve to strengthen the faith in God, who is a root and ground of all knowledge, and in challenging and ringing tones, we shall exclaim with the prophet, and here quoting from Tennyson, "Let knowledge grow from more to more, but more of reverence in us dwell, that mind and soul according well may make one music as before, but vaster." Having identified this problem, Epstein wrote a series of profound essays addressing a range of modern questions, which can be found in this sadly underappreciated, yet profoundly wise book. Since 1954, which is when The Faith of Judaism was first published, similar works of Jewish thought and philosophy have been published by modern Orthodox scholars, which address both older and newer questions arising in each subsequent generation. Yet it is important to note that while Epstein's book is primarily philosophical and intellectual, his diagnosis of the problem facing Orthodoxy is that it was both intellectual and emotional. True, he spoke about the value of knowing both what to believe and why we should believe. And true, he spoke of instructing people in the doctrinal aspects of the Jewish religion and its underlying philosophy. Yet he also spoke about the negative impact of contemporary discourse, where men and women breathe in a vitiated atmosphere, which they mistake for fresh air, and insensibly suffer from a spiritual anemia, which is fatal to Jewish loyalty and Jewish life. Now, having explained all this, let me tell you a little bit about what I do and why I'm sharing this with you today. As you may know, beyond my teaching, I'm what I've called a virtual rabbi, which means that I provide online spiritual coaching, halachic consultations, and one-to-one learning to men, women, and couples who don't have a rabbi. Admittedly, people of all different backgrounds and ideological affiliations use my services, and I have clients throughout North America, Europe, including the UK, and in Israel. Still, the majority of my clients are modern Orthodox men and women, aged between 30 and 60. And having had many conversations exploring Jewish faith, spirituality, and religious practice with them, I feel it necessary to share some trends taking place in the modern Orthodox world, trends which aren't visible or often discussed, but nevertheless trends that we should be aware of. Simply put, to again invoke the words of Isidore Epstein, there are many modern Orthodox Jews who are at best ambiguous in defining what they believe or why. And both paralleling and as a consequence of this, there are many modern Orthodox Jews suffering, and some severely, from spiritual anemia. Admittedly, and this is important to emphasize, these trends are not limited to modern Orthodoxy. Still, while modern Orthodoxy expends much energy discussing its core ideology, far less attention is given to the state of belief within modern Orthodoxy, especially amongst the demographic of those aged 30 to 60. Yes, many discussions are had about what is going on with our youth, but the crisis I'm seeing is that of their parents, which I believe is directly impacting how modern Orthodox youth are living and breathing their Judaism. Having explained all this, I'd like to revisit and explain the word interiority, which refers to the pnimiut, the inner spiritual quality of an individual, and which stands in contrast to their exterior appearance. And now, having defined this word, I believe that the unspoken spiritual crisis facing our community is not one of appearance and visible practice where, as has been noted by various scholars, we have seen a slide to the right towards greater observance, but rather in terms of interior Jewish belief and faith. Perhaps the first who attempted to diagnose this problem was Jay Lefkowitz, who, in an article published in Commentary magazine in 2014, titled The Rise of Social Orthodoxy, A Personal Account, noted that, to be sure, many modern Orthodox rabbis and some of their congregants are steadfast in their faith and look to halakha to guide all aspects of their lives. But if unwavering acceptance of the Torah's divine is a precondition for orthodoxy, then the term modern Orthodox may well be a misnomer for many Jews who identify as modern Orthodox. As he continues, they might more accurately be described as social Orthodox, with the emphasis on social. As Lefkowitz then continues to explain, I had a conversation about religion with a devout Catholic friend, and when I explained that I was an observant Jew and began each day by reciting the morning prayers, but wasn't really sure how God fit into my life, he was perplexed. When I admitted that these theological questions didn't really occupy much of my attention and certainly weren't particularly germane to my life as an observant Jew, he became agitated. When I told him that I certainly wasn't sure if Jewish law was divine or simply the result of 2 millennia of rabbinical interpretations, he threw up his hands and said, "How can you do everything you do and live a life with so many restrictions and so many obligations if you don't even believe in God?" Lefkowitz then concludes, "So for me, and I imagine for many others like me, the key to Jewish living is not our religious beliefs, but our commitment to a set of practices and values that foster community and continuity." When Lefkowitz's article was published, it caused a stir. Many responded by agreeing with him, while many others challenged his conclusions. Personally, from the many spiritual coaching sessions I've had, I don't agree with his conclusion that modern Orthodox men and women don't believe in God. Nor do I agree that they don't know how God fits into their lives. Still, what they do indicate is that something is amiss in terms of modern Orthodox Jewish belief, and that many middle-aged modern Orthodox Jews are suffering from spiritual anemia, and that sadly, most modern Orthodox institutions don't seem to be interested in addressing either faith or spirituality. The key question, of course, is why has this happened? True, prior to 1954, there were few books like Isidore Epstein's A Faith of Judaism. But we, those who identify as modern Orthodox in the 21st century, or those who have been taught by and studied the works of giants, such as Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Rabinovich, and Rabbi Sacks. So why are we again facing, like angry jury faced 70 years ago, a crisis of faith? I believe that, once again, it seems appropriate to quote Rabbi Epstein, who, as you'll recall, explained that among the several causes producing this situation must certainly be included the poisonous atmosphere generated by the incessant output of a literature written in a charming and captivating style which attacks the foundations of religious ideas. The only difference being that while then it was real pages of literature, today it is digital pages of opinions and blog posts. I hope by now that it's obvious why this topic has attracted little attention in our world. This is because the ideology and arguably the mantra of modern orthodoxy asserts that one can live a life of synthesis that is both fully committed to orthodoxy and fully engaged in the modern world. While this observation, that there are ideas in the modern world that attack or cynically dismiss the foundations of our beliefs, may be misrepresented as suggesting that this synthesis is impossible. To be crystal clear, this is not what I am saying. In fact, you'll recall that Isidore Epstein's solution was not about retreating from the modern world, but rather about increasing our knowledge to reach the point, as Tennyson so exquisitely wrote, that knowledge grow from more to more, but more of reverence in us dwell. So why do most modern Orthodox institutions not seem to be interested in addressing either faith or spirituality? Admittedly, one answer relates to the uniquely personal nature of the faith of modern Orthodox Jews, which means that while we are prepared to discuss questions relating to Shabbat and Kashrut in class or with rabbis, i.e. the exterior form of Jewish observance, we are much more guarded when we consider the kinds of people with whom we discuss our faith, i.e. our interior Jewish experience. So while many of our religious practices are connected to others and we feel comfortable discussing them in the Roshut HaRabim, meaning the public spaces of schools and communities, faith is private and personal and is therefore rarely discussed out loud. A further answer relates to the way in which we view our religious guides and rabbis, whose role many of us have limited, we've narrowed to providing us with halachic guidance rather than guidance in emunah. While a Haredi Rav may address matters of hashkafa and halacha, modern Orthodox rabbis and spiritual leaders often only focus, or often only told to focus, on halacha. True, there are a handful of modern Orthodox teachers and leaders who speak about pnimiut, meaning interiority, but they are the exception, not the rule. As Mark Stern explains while speaking about Yirat Shemayim, but expressing a problem which I think goes far beyond it, it is as if we in the modern Orthodox community are discomforted by God talk. This reticence is not, God forbid, because we are guilty of substituting orthopraxy for orthodoxy, although there is some measure of that, because we have not developed a modern vocabulary of fear of God. Yet though it may be true that we lack a modern term to describe fear of God, I strongly believe that this does not justify our discomfort of God talk. As Rabbi Moshe Weinberg explained while speaking both about more yeshivish and modern Orthodox communities, we have prospered financially and religiously. The self-portrait of our Torah community shows all colors and features real to life. Soon, and he wrote this some years ago, the Siyum HaShas will take place before an anticipated audience of 90,000 people. Our institutions are bursting at the seams. We have a formidable array of daily and weekly publications filled with our own current events and advertisements for the latest Pesach getaways. Many neighborhoods take pride in their minion factories, where a marav can be caught until the wee hours of the night. We have morning kollels and evening kollels and gemachs for everything under the sun. Just one thing is missing, the soul. On this point, I'd like to quote from Rav Soloveitchik, who once remarked, to a greater or less degree, as an educator and teacher on the plane of Gadlut HaMochim, meaning mental greatness, my students have received much Torah learning from me. But I have not seen much growth on the experiential plane. I have not succeeded in living in common with them, cleaving to them, and bestowing some of my personal warmth on them. I have fallen short in my role as one who spreads the Torah of the heart, and the failing lies with me. I must say that I very much respect Rav Soloveitchik for acknowledging this fact. The problem, however, is that it has been duplicated by many other religious teachers since then. Such a while a Torah student or trainee rabbi can learn much halacha and yeshiva kollel, they often underappreciate the passion, the heart, and the concept of spirituality in divine service. Before moving on, have you ever thought about the place of faith, Jewish philosophy and spirituality in the training we give rabbis? In a recent interview with David Bashevkin, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, the head of the rabbinical training program at Yeshiva University, made the following remark. I do get emails from time to time from people saying, I went to Yeshiva University, I have smicha from Yeshiva University, and it's such a travesty and it's so terrible that I don't know Tanakh or that I don't know the basics of Jewish philosophy. He then added, we actually do have a course in the basics of Jewish philosophy that students have to take. Still, my response is that smicha is a particular degree. It's a degree in paskening halacha, in ruling on halachic matters. We happen to incorporate more into it because we're trying to prepare our rabbis for all the different things that they're going to face, to the extent that it's possible. But it is a particular degree. You can't expect that you come out of smicha knowing everything that you need to know. And part of the degree is not to know the Mor Nevuchim, and not necessarily to know Emunah B'Tachon, whatever the different philosophical works are. You should get to it at some point in your life. In contrast to this, Rav Nachum Rabinovich, again a former head of Jews College, makes it clear in his book Mesilot B'Levavam that the lack of attention given to meaningful discussion and study of Jewish philosophy in Jewish communities today is nothing short of a travesty. But here's a question. Why does Jewish philosophy matter? Why should rabbis and other spiritual leaders spend more time thinking about answers to Jewish philosophical questions and considering issues relating to faith, emunah, and spirituality? I presume that the answer to this question should be obvious because people don't just want to be told what to do. Instead, they also want to reflect on the meaning and events taking place in their lives and in their world. And without the Jewish philosophical spiritual dimension, this proves very difficult. However, to give full expression of why it matters, I'd like to tell you about a conversation with one of my clients a few months ago. This individual, a highly intelligent modern Orthodox woman who has attended the best of schools for all her life, is currently dealing with the fact that her daughter is very unwell. This, however, wasn't our primary focus of discussion. Instead, when she booked a session with me, she explained that it was in order to discuss how her daughter's illness is a physical punishment for her spiritual failings and what she should do to make spiritual improvements. Upon hearing this, I asked her why she held this belief, and she explained that this was what she'd understood to be the Jewish view of children who were ill. Let us just pause here for a second, because what this means is that while a parent was grappling with her child being sick, she was also feeling guilty for causing her child to be sick. Why did she think this way? Because of her faulty understanding of Jewish philosophy. Let me now give you another example here with respect to faith. Someone, actually a rabbi, contacted me feeling profoundly guilty. And why? Because the way he had been educated up about faith is that one needs to have certain faith, absolute faith. The problem was that he had doubts in his faith, and he felt that he was being disingenuous as a religious leader, given his doubts and given the fact that he did not have all the answers. Unfortunately, this individual had not previously encountered the words of Rabbi Sacks, who wrote how faith is not certainty, it is the courage to live with uncertainty, it is not knowing all the answers. Nor had he encountered the words of Rav Lichtenstein, who explains that what I received from all my mentors was that the key to confronting life, particularly modern life, in all its complexity, is that the recognition that it was not so necessary to have all the answers as to learn to live with the questions. Simply put, a lack of nuanced Jewish philosophy and faith education meant that these two people, like others who have turned to me, were beating themselves up based on mistaken explanations and interpretations. It is at this point that I'd like to share the words of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein from his essay titled Purify Our Hearts to Serve You with Truth, where he explains that when we analyze error, we can distinguish at least three significant elements. Errors in halacha, errors in emunah, and errors in seeking to understand God. In terms of halacha, he references a prayer of Rabbi Chuna ben Hakana, recited upon entering the study hall, asking God that we not stumble with regard to a matter of halacha. He then moves on to the second category of emunah, which is a central value in its own right, and a basis for the observance of mitzvot generally, and states that we pray that our emunah be steadfast and pure, and that it be neither buffeted by the winds of skepticism and relativism, nor contaminated by the taints of schematic heresy and heterodox revisionism. Finally, when addressing our attempts to understand God, Rav Lichtenstein is of the opinion that though we are charged to relate to the Almighty, and though we ultimately know that all of our efforts are doomed because the Almighty is by definition transcendent and beyond human ken, still we are enjoined to do our human best to transcend the apparent conflict, purify our conceptions, and serve in as much as the Torah was not given to the ministering angels. Our limited service will be accepted by God. Yet, and this is a point that I raised in a Facebook post last year, while those who teach and rule on halakha often spend much time researching their halachic rulings in order to ensure that they not stumble with regard to a matter of halakha, many who teach and speak matters relating to emunah, as well as those who teach about how we should attempt to understand God, often share what they think to be true, but their preparation is rarely anywhere near as rigorous or as nuanced as their teaching of halakha. And the problem with this is that those whose carelessness cause errors to creep into their teaching of emunah and matters relating to our understanding of God often forget that these matters are not only central values in their own right, but they are also a basis for the observance of mitzvot generally, which means that when someone discovers errors in matter of halacha and God, this can directly impact their attitude and practice of mitzvot. Given this, I ended my post with a plea that if you're privileged with teaching people about emunah and understanding God, then please recognize that the ideas that you teach do directly affect people, and that as a teacher, your task is to ensure as best as you can that what you teach is true, which can only be achieved by rigorous and nuanced preparation of the material ideas that you wish to teach. What this means is that while great care is often shown by religious leaders to avoid a ta'ut badavar halacha, errors in halacha, little effort is shown to avoid ta'ut badavar emunah, errors in emunah. Yet in most cases, the fact is that the consequences of the latter are far greater than the former. By this point, I hope you'll agree that we've covered quite a few things. Overall, it would seem that poor discourse about Jewish philosophy, faith and spirituality within modern orthodoxy, coupled with our presumption within modern orthodoxy, the religious leaders are only there to answer halachic questions, along with the many confusing and conflicting ideas that we encounter in the modern world, is directly impacting the faith of many modern Orthodox Jews who, while on the outside seem to be highly observant, on the inside are very confused about their faith, yet don't feel that they have anyone to talk to. While I hope I've pointed to some solutions, there is one final point I'd like to mention relating to the role of prayer. Because when someone is confused about their relationship with God, they should be encouraged to pray to God. On this point, Rav Lichtenstein tells a story about Baratanya, who decides to go to Vilna to learn by the Gra, by the Vilna Gaon. En route, he was met by an older person who asked him, "Where are you going?" To which he replied, "I'm going to Vilna to learn from the Vilna Gaon." The elder said to him, "You know how to learn somewhat, but you don't know how to pray at all. Better to go to the Mezritch and Magid." To which Rav Lichtenstein added, without passing judgment on this particular encounter, let us ask ourselves, what is a more acute problem in our centrist community? To which his answer is prayer. As he writes elsewhere, for the modern Orthodox Jew and his community in particular, the inclination and the capacity to pray properly and with passion, with a plaintive cri de cœur, issuing mimam akim from the depths, is often sadly deficient. For some people like Jay Lefkowitz, this is their modern orthodoxy. However, while there are those who are simply numb to this reality and it doesn't bother them, others who begin by feeling spiritually anemic eventually feel a total disconnect. Trapped by their situation, they feel hollow, bereft, and lost. Admittedly, those who are married or are very involved in their community often still maintain a facade, although it should be noted these feelings are often noticed by a spouse and by children, which, as previously noted, can generate serious questions relating to Shalom Bayit. While some are honest enough with themselves to try and look for deeper ways to connect, such as through modern neo-Hasidic study and practices, although it should be noted that this is welcome with wider arms in Israel than in modern Orthodox communities in the US and the UK. Yet while men and women who undergo such crises often react differently, with men often feeling frustration while women often expressing feelings of being let down, it is singles, many of whom sadly feel that they have no coherent place in our community, who, when confronting this reality, often simply walk away. You may ask, so what are the rabbis doing about all this? And as I've explained, I believe that this answer is not enough. However, it should be noted that unlike the UK, in Israel, over 50% of shuls don't have rabbis, while half of the rest only have part-time rabbis, and the other half, obviously, full-time positions. What this means is that there are many people who go to shul but don't even have a rabbi, or whose rabbi is not really available for much of the week. Beyond this, even in the diaspora, where shuls can often have more than one rabbinic couple working full-time, the fact is that with the pressure to run big events with many attendees, the duty to deliver perfect sermons and classes, and the need to respond to urgent life cycle events such as bereavements, means that even a well-qualified rabbi rarely has the time to have hour-long, one-to-one chats with their congregants about theology, about faith. Of course, there are many modern Orthodox Jews who are not experienced in such a crisis. Yet what I hope I've explained here is that this crisis shouldn't be happening. We aren't living in 1954, where there's little guidance about Jewish thought. Instead, we're living in 2022, and between then and now, some true giants of Jewish faith, philosophy, and spirituality have lived and made huge contributions to Jewish thought. Yet, for the reasons I've explained, while so many of the issues I've raised could be addressed and diminished, especially by modern orthodoxy, they are overlooked and ignored. Let me end where I began, quoting Rabbi Dr. Isidore Epstein, as well as Tennyson, who explained that only if a greater effort is made to instruct people in the doctrinal aspects of the Jewish religion and its underlying philosophy, can there be any hope of stemming the tide of irreligion which sweeps away so many and of building up a generation of unflinching religious loyalty and sturdy faith. Then gone will be the fear that the increase of knowledge will destroy the essence of our faith. On the contrary, equipped with a deep understanding of what Judaism teaches, the increase of knowledge will only serve to strengthen the faith in God, who is the root and ground of all knowledge. And in challenging and ringing tones, we shall exclaim with a poet, "Let knowledge grow from more to more, but more of reverence in us dwell, that mind and soul according well may make one music as before, but vaster." Thank you.